who say, "Oh, was there an Elektra movie? I forget." There are men who say, "Oh, are they making a Luke Cage TV show? I hadn't heard." And then there's Adam Bernstein and Doug Bost. Two men who should have better things to do, but aren't doing them right now. These are two grown-ass men.
Grown-ass men.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Grown-Ass Men.
You know what? I have a bone to pick with all these other podcasts that are grown-ass men.
Oh, let's hear it.
There's a bunch of them.
Okay.
And I don't like them, and I'm not happy about it.
Tell me about it.
So far, there was three altogether, including us,
okay,
on iTunes.
Okay.
And
let's declare war on them.
This is a formal declaration of war right here. And anyway, another one just popped up, and it looks and sounds bad. I won't say which one. They all basically have the same name.
Are they all about like geek culture?
No.
What are they about?
No. I don't even know what they're about.
Okay.
I can't listen that long to figure it out.
Wow.
But now I just was on my mind.
Right.
And I just want to put out there.
Start the episode off with some negativity.
Yeah.
Just really.
That's
like,
what I'm known for.
Right.
And that we are the best.
Yes.
Anyway, so Meg.
We are lucky today to have M. Sweeney Lawless with us. Writer, performer, hilarious sketch comedian, dramaturg. Meg and I have been in a comedy group.
We sort of are still in a comedy group.
Turns out that we had some more shows.
Some stage time.
Yes,
right.
And Meg is here today to talk with us about a character who is near and dear to our hearts and is kind of new to Adam. Not
very new.
Wasn't really on your radar.
Wasn't on my radar, not because I was not interested. It just some things just don't come across your plate for some reason.
And that character is Hellboy.
Hellboy.
Ah, oh, I like the way you say it.
Hellboy, with your crown of flame. Hellboy, and your demonic claim. Hellboy, working for the BPRD. The world's greatest paranormal investigator. The world's greatest paranormal investigator. Hellboy.
Why did you want to talk about Hellboy?
Because Hellboy. Hellboy kind of incorporates everything that is fun. Folk tales and traditional stories, either woven in or they're retellings of that. So you have all the depth and traditional goodness going on, and then you get Hellboy.
That's what Mike Mignola is so good at, is taking these folk tales that I've never heard before, but they're old folk tales. They're
right.
Real folk tales, like Irish tales and Japanese folk tales, Norwegian, wherever, and inserting Hellboy in the middle of them and retelling them in a fantastic way.
Right.
So much fun, I think, because he kind of inserts Hellboy into these very creepy stories.
Yes.
And Hellboy, it's almost like he's going to work.
Right.
I always feel like he's going to work. Yeah,
he's a paranormal investigator. He works for the
BPRD.
BPRD.
He's punching the clock.
Right.
He's done this before, and he's kind of sick of these monsters too.
Right.
You know, he's like, it's like every annoying job you have,
right,
only for him it's monsters.
He's like other world weary.
I've seen pictures of Hellboy for, you know, so many years, even though I never read one, and I always thought that those things on his head were like those kind of things that the old pilots wore.
Goggles?
Yeah. And then I finally realized that they were cut off horns when I started to read. And I was like, that is cool.
It is so cool. I mean, because my favorite thing about him is that he very well might be the beast of the apocalypse.
Right.
Like the worst thing that there is. And everybody treats him. What I love is so many times in the stories, he'll encounter some demonic force that treats him with respect and is like, well,
one of us.
Yeah.
One day you will take over. And he's like, no, I'm not going to do that because I'm a paranormal investigator. And I shave off my horns because I don't like having those enormous.
You know, he knows he's gigantic and has a giant, like, right hand.
He refers to other cases that he saw. And he's like, I've seen this before.
Right. Back in 52.
Right back in 54. Right in Ireland.
Asterix. Yes, it does.
Also, he's got another name. I mean, he often is called, Anung Ung Rama.
Yeah.
Anung Ung Rama means, and upon his brow is set a crown of flame.
Yes. I read
that.
Kind
of show and tell.
I think I read that in the introduction.
And he's called that by the other monsters that he encounters.
Right, because that's his name.
Yes, because they all know that he is to be respected and feared. And there's fantastic visions that sometimes he has. He'll fall asleep, and the vision he has is of him sitting on a mountain of skulls with his full horns and a flaming crown.
Right, like a crown above his head.
Yeah, and everyone, the lamentations of all the worlds are at his feet. What really appealed to me and to Carolyn when we were first reading Hellboy is who he is, that he's really this terrible, the son of Satan, and he's denying the true nature of who he is.
Right.
And he wants to be his own person. He wants to, like, he doesn't want to be trapped in what everybody says is his destiny. He's like, I'm going to do it my own way.
I'm wondering, though, is that like an old part of the story about Satan, that the son of Satan is always trying to get away from Satan?
Maybe.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know how where that story originates. You know, but
like, Dad, I don't want to take over the business. We're looking at the third collection, is that right? Is it the third or the second? I don't even know.
I think
it is the third.
Yeah.
The Chained Coffin and Other Stories. And so if you just parachute into this collection, it's very fun because the first story in it is the corpse. And he's walking through this kind of hellish landscape, and there's, you know, the idea of, you know, you may want to kill this baby.
Yeah,
and right.
Is Hellboy going to kill a baby? Like, the first time I've met him, he's going to kill a baby?
Right, and I'm thinking, of course you're going to kill the baby. That's not a baby. It's a changeling. Like,
yeah.
Right? Oh, spoilers. So, but you know, these are stories I grew up when I was very tiny, and it's, of course, like, what do you do? What if you think the baby's a changeling? Well, you put him on the coal shovel and you hold him by the fire, duh. Or you carry them over water, or you bring them near iron, or, you know, all of these things. And so it's like right away, it's they're going past yard arms and.
Well, I love that, like, when he finds the when he sees the corpse hanging from the noose.
Right.
But first, it's just an empty noose.
Yeah.
Yep.
He watches it for a minute, and then suddenly there's a skeleton hanging from it.
At midnight it appears.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you stand at the crossroads, that's the beautiful thing, is like, oh, you know, the crossroads, if you stand there at midnight, the corpse appears again in the noose, you know. And then what happens?
Like, what was with the horseshoe kind of thing? That,
well, it's iron.
Oh, it was iron.
Yeah.
So why is iron able to detect some that's like evil or something?
Well, your bad fairies, your bad little imps and things like that, they can't stand the sound of church bells ringing, and they can't cross water, and they hate iron. So there's a lot of, you know, the old stories of people who carry, you know, a horseshoe nail or something, an iron nail,
like a Dracula with
off,
garlic
kind right
of thing.
Exactly.
I didn't know that.
Stories I grew up when I was very tiny.
But why, like, who was telling you those stories when you were very tiny? Because I didn't.
People who wanted me to be quiet.
Yeah, that's right.
Obvious.
They wanted to freak you out.
And it worked.
Where are you from?
Well, I was born in St. Louis and lived in several different states, whatever. So that was the cool thing about moving to new schools, was like, you found out what they're reading. And and you know, I would say that comics didn't affect my life as much as Mad Magazine. But that's every comic I know, pretty much. But I also tended to like, you know, Midnight, The Witching Hour, and like all those, like, creepy and weird. If it was
the black and white magazines.
Yeah, that was, you know, he's playing chess with a robot and he wins, so he turns into a robot, like that. Kind of like, you know.
It was like, you collected them, or did you buy Mad Magazine every month?
No, I had three brothers.
Month?
There was no collecting anything. Like, whatever came in the house was fair game, and, you know, There was we were not a bag and board kind of a
kind of a situation.
We're not a bag and board kind
of
family.
Yeah, Maria Calera, where's the cover? Shut up, where's the cover?
Right.
Yeah, so I mean I you know, read them when I was a kid, and then kind of they lost me a little because I liked the stories, and truthfully, like, I got back into comics with the Berger books, you know, like the Vertigo stuff where, you know, Karen Berger was the editor, and you know, there was like,
I don't really know much about Karen Berger.
Well, she was at DC, and there was, you know, so it's like Neil Gaiman and, you know, then Visibles and Animal Man and, you know, just
Mr. X, like around that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of interesting to me. Even though I was a grown-up, I was reading them, but it was also a time when other grown-ups were reading them on the subway, and you could you could have conversations as an adult and not feel like somebody was like, oh, your kid likes that, you know? You taking that home to your kid?
Mike Mignola came up with the character, did it for a long time, did a lot of Hellboy stories, and he kind of figured out his own narrative, his own order for how they went, what order the stories really went in. And then it seemed like around the time that the movies came out, he got tired of doing it.
Mm.
And he gave it to other people. And he kept writing and he kept like contributing, but he let other people draw and be the principal writers on a lot of the stories.
Oh,
and
really? Is that so?
The BPRD came along and they had all these spin-offs. But they, for my money, were never as good without him doing everything.
Right.
Then, more recently, he killed off Hellboy. And now there's a series called Hellboy in Hell, which is all, it's Mike Mignola doing everything again. And it's great.
Mm.
And so,
it's,
you know,
the helliest.
He killed him off. But, of course, you don't just kill Hellboy. Like, he goes to hell. So now, in the first, if
well,
you haven't read
him. Well, he's killed. But what does that mean? We already know there's like afterlife and afterlives.
If you haven't read Hellboy in Hell, like the first three issues of that are some of the best of the whole Hellboy series. They're just stellar.
Sometimes Mignola can get very, very stylized. Yes. So if there is a big brawl in a dark place with statues flying to pieces and like crucifixes used as like spears flying through the air, and you know, it can take you a minute to go like, okay, so what I'm looking at is Hellboy upside down punching one guy and falling into a well. Okay, got it, you know.
Right.
Well, I was thinking about that because I'm really impressed with how Mike Mignola puts together comic books, because it's very, in a way, his art is inspired by Jack Kirby. It's very...
It is Kirby-esque.
It is very Kirby-esque. And like the fights and the angles. And yet, also, he does something that is unique to comics. They're not linear like most comics. They're not linear like movies are linear. It's a story where you can keep going back. And in a way, the book rewards you for going back. After you've read two pages, you go back a couple of pages and you go, oh, I get it. That was a frog that did this over here, and that skeleton became this thing here.
Right.
And so because it's a comic book and you can sit there and go back through the pages, he uses that fact that you're actually reading something as a way of telling a story differently. It's not like a movie where you're only going forward and you can't stop and go back and rewatch. Like with the way he does Hellboy comics, there are all these little pieces and you can kind of eventually put them all together.
Right. And his pacing is always incredible because he takes his time and devotes a lot of space and a lot of importance to like a visual, da-na, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like when somebody is saying, and the beast is me. It's just perfect. It's the oh no before the action. It's like he lets the news just drop down the well irretrievably before it all breaks loose. The Wolves of St. August is just great because it has all the has all the elements of a good horror story without being a horror story, really. It doesn't have the cliches of a horror story. I mean, yeah. that's another thing.
It's not cliche like the horror stories I read in comic books.
Not at all.
Right.
That's what it was definitely felt real different about it.
I love this story, Christmas Underground, too. That's another great one.
Yeah.
He meets the old woman, and then he meets the young woman who's a ghost.
Right, yeah. It's Christmassy.
It's great.
That was good. I liked that one, too.
And you just feel like Mike Mignola has read so many folk tales and has so many folk tales that he loves and wants to tell that he's, you know, telling a couple of tales, like, layered on top of each other sometimes.
He's not as rooted in comic books as his influence.
As
is
in, as he is in maybe H.P. Lovecraft and, you know, Irish folk stories.
Yeah, that was interesting, I thought, when I was able to pick that up. It didn't seem like he mostly read, like, you know, Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Right, it doesn't seem to be referring to other comics.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But it does refer to folk stories, which gives it kind of this massive resonance that goes back, because those things survive, those stories survive for a long time because they're terrifying, you know? They're tried and true. They're like, these are the kinds of things that like your subconscious does.
Right.
And we've codified kind of as stories or as warnings for each other or whatever. So he's got that going on already, and it's comics. So it probably happened recently, and look, it's comics. So, you know, your brain also brings all this stuff. It isn't over with, it's not gone, it's not past. It's not something you can't even think of anymore. Like, of course we can, because look, here it is.
I think that's something that makes it a little bit harder for me on the entryway, because I'm so used to the continuum of the heroes, and the Marvel Universe is so connected. Right, and this is just like, it's a complete separate entity. So you have to really like spend time just getting into this. It's not referring to anything that I've read before.
When our world is threatened by forces beyond our understanding, our government turns to an elite, top-secret organization.
So they made two movies of Hellboy, and I was always disappointed. Three?
There are three.
Are there three
movies? I don't know.
Maybe there are two.
On Netflix.
I stick by Hellboy, the first.
You like the first.
I don't like any of the movies.
Oh, crap.
The movies, I thought, missed what was good about the comics.
Which is?
Right.
Which is that the world he's in is really scary.
Right.
And that he is navigating it.
Yeah.
But they kind of turn him into this man-child who's very socially awkward, and there's too much of that kind
of
figuring out, is he in love with the other character? And
And he's a romantic competitor with the FBI agent.
Yeah, he's kind of a dope.
Whatever.
It's much more fun in the comics, I think, when he comes into a situation, and like I was saying before, like, he's going to work. There's a great story where he's about to, it's called The Varkalak, and he's going to kill a vampire. And right before he drives the stake into the vampire, into her heart, the floor falls away and he encounters all these other vampires, and they try to take him to their vampire king, and all these terrible things happen. And then suddenly, right when everything seems darkest, it goes back and he's back at the moment where he was going to drive the stake into the vampire's heart. And he realizes that it's all just been a vision. And he looks at her and he goes, "Hey, you put the whammy on me." And then he just drives the stake through her heart. It's just fantastic. Like, that, again, is a standalone panel. "Hey, you put the whammy on me."
But usually that would be enough to terrify anybody into, like, hesitating so long that they would lose the battle, right?
Right.
So,
no, not Hellboy.
Nope.
Well, Craig Russell does the introduction in this Coffin Bride.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Great artist who I knew from some Marvel stuff. Oh, he did. Oh man, what, like Kill Raven or something
he
like
did
that?
He did some monster comics, didn't he?
I don't know. Craig Russell. He did a bunch of stuff early on, but he raves about owning some of this art. He has 5 pages of
Lucky
it.
Lucky duck.
Really?
Yeah. The art is
allow
great.
Allow me to brag for a moment, because I happen to have a piece of Hellboy art myself.
Hmm.
What?
A friend of mine.
I find this out now?
A friend of mine. It's not from any comic. A friend of mine knows him and was out at dinner with him. And she and her husband were having dinner with Mike. And she said, oh, by the way, my friend Doug likes Hellboy so much that he's got a giant frame of Hellboy saying, what the hell is this, on his wall. And he's like, oh, that's cool. So during dinner, he's sitting there and he's got a big sketch pad during dinner. And he sketched.
Because of course he does.
That's so awesome.
He sketched a picture of Hellboy. And it's just Hellboy's like head and shoulders. And he's got a word balloon over his head. And it says, Doug.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, so I had to frame that. It was really nice. Meg, what else are you reading? Are you reading any comics besides Hellboy right now? Do you read Hellboy in Hell? Do you read the new stuff as it comes out or not?
I have not.
Okay. What do you read?
I hadn't read Hellboy in a while, and we were just talking about it, and I was like, oh yeah, we could go back there.
Yeah.
It turns out I have about 7 inches of comics.
Oh, wow. 7 inches of Mignola.
Yeah, because you know, you gotta. No, I've been reading a lot of Wodehouse lately.
Really?
Yeah.
Really. All right.
Thanks, Meg.
All right. There you have it. M. Sweeney Lawless.
Thanks
Thank
for
you
having
very
me
much.
On day one of your grown-ass war.
Yeah.
Grown-ass war.
Declaring war on all other grown-ass men.
Yes. Look out.
Goodbye.
Grown-ass men. Hellboy, what's your fantasy? Hellboy.